5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
I know you're gonna dig this.
Welcome to the Barrett Sports Media Podcast.
Think we could listen to the radio or something?
Radio? Who needs a radio?
Featuring the biggest names and newsmakers from the world of sports media.
Don't act like you're not impressed.
Now, here's your host, the president of Barrett Sports Media, Jason Barrett.
Welcome in, one and all, to another episode of the Barrett Sports Media Podcast, where we feature members of the sports media industry and tackle the latest topics making news in the sports radio business. I am Jason Barrett, your host for this audio journey. My thanks to you for making us part of your day. If time allows and you can leave a quick review on iTunes, I'd greatly appreciate it. On this episode, I'll be connecting with the mastermind behind 670 The Score in Chicago. That would be Mitch Rosen. Our conversation is coming up in just a few minutes. Before we do that, I'm helping the folks at 101 ESPN in St. Louis conduct a nationwide search for a top-notch digital and social media brand manager. This station and company run their business exceptionally well. It's a spot you can truly build something great at. I speak from firsthand experience. The job is posted on the website, sportsradiopd.com. If you have the skills necessary for the position, send your resume and vision to me via email, jbarrett@sportsradiopd.com. Also, be sure to check out the website, sportsradiopd.com, the week after Thanksgiving. I recently sat down with Mike Francesa of WFAN in New York for about an hour to reflect on his three-decade run in the Big Apple. That story will be very interesting to many of you. We touched on some of the stuff you'd expect, such as who's replacing him, what he'll miss about the show, his connection to the audience, all that. But we also dove into some deeper discussion on different areas of the business. I think you'll find it very insightful. But that's what's coming up around the corner, and we've got some current issues to explore. So let's get rolling with this week's rendition of the 5 and 5.
There are 5 minutes remaining.
As expected, Entercom came out of the gate swinging following the closing of their merger with CBS Radio. The company reduced inventory on stations, added a few experienced and highly respected market managers. They flipped a few formats, including returning 92.3 FM to its rock roots in New York City. And they demonstrated their passion for sports by securing the rights to the Minnesota Twins for WCCO and announcing a 7-year rights extension with the Philadelphia Eagles on WIP. Sports teams are going to love Entercom because they're bullish on play-by-play. Local market managers, PDs, and staff members at their stations will love the company because their corporate group are aggressively trying to help them. Who won't love them? Every other radio operator competing for play-by-play rights. In the words of Jim Ross, business is about to pick up. ESPN president John Skipper received an early Christmas gift, a contract extension through 2021. I don't know John personally, but he's come across as a good man with the right intentions, and folks I know at the network speak highly of him. I have no doubt his job is complicated. But whether he's a good man or not, you can't dismiss the problems that have plagued ESPN on his watch. They may be more of a reflection on Bob Iger and Disney, but Skipper shares in the blame too. The company has lost millions of subscribers, overpaid on rights deals, lost a number of high-profile personalities, blurred the lines of sports and politics, displayed incompetence in its handling of social media issues involving top stars, and most notably, laid off a number of good people. In fact, the company will lay off more staff after Thanksgiving. If Skipper warrants an extension, that's fine. But so much in business depends on timing. Announcing it right before you gut another 100 employees just further emphasizes ESPN's lack of awareness and another reason why they've become difficult for many to root for. Speaking of ESPN criticisms, Scott Van Pelt has a big problem with them.
Not once in my whole life has somebody come up to me and said, hey, ESPN sucks, you suck. This make-believe world where everyone wants to talk shit, there's nothing more chicken shit than that.
That was Van Pelt on Jimmy Traina's podcast expressing his frustrations over critical comments directed towards ESPN on social media. What I don't understand is why he's so butthurt over it. ESPN is being compared to what it once was. That's not going to go away. There's plenty on the network to like, including Van Pelt's show. To think, though, that you're not going to be roasted over layoffs, politics, partnerships with Barstool, high-profile talent replacements, and other stories is naive. I give him credit for speaking up for his employer, and he's doing so right after signing a new contract. But I also wonder if sometimes Scott's skin might just be a little too thin. Starting in January, ESPN Radio will roll out a new weekday lineup. Trey Wingo and Mike Golic have already replaced Mike and Mike in the morning. Nothing changes with Levitard's show. But soon enough, listeners across the nation will be treated to Stephen A. Smith in middays, Ryan Russillo and Will Cain in afternoons, Jason Fitz and Sarah Spain in evenings, and Freddie Coleman and Ian Fitzsimmons later in the night. From a quality standpoint, I think these moves are a positive for the network. Smith was already on in New York and L.A. in the same time slot. Whether he's your cup of tea or not, he's one of the company's biggest stars, so it only makes sense to feature him more. Kane has shown a lot of promise, and pairing him with Russillo gives the company a PM drive show, which is a better fit in smaller East Coast and Midwest cities where the network earns more drive time clearance. The changes also benefit Bomani Jones and Jalen and Jacoby because their move into the podcast space strengthens the company's digital content and allows them to focus on their more important roles on television. This isn't going to make a major difference in local radio ratings, but in terms of audio presentation, I think ESPN upgraded here. Many in sports radio circles are upset by WFAN's decision to replace Mike Francesa with Chris Carlin, Bart Scott, and Maggie Gray. Among them, Christopher Mad Dog Russo.
I am flabbergasted. The guy that you found and replaced him is a linebacker for the Baltimore Ravens who urinated on us? You gotta come up with something better than that.
No matter who went in after Mike, they were gonna have a target on their back. What worked the past three decades wasn't guaranteed to continue for the next decade. It does seem odd that the fan would go with a three-person show opposite Michael Kay, especially with three people who haven't worked together before. It's also puzzling that Bart and Maggie would be given such a big piece of real estate despite limited radio experience. That puts a lot on Carlin's shoulders, who also has to prove he could deliver in weekdays in New York, something he hasn't done before. That said, this is what Mark Chernoff has proven to be great at. If he hits another home run, it adds to his legacy. If he misses, he's public enemy number one. But give him credit for having the guts to take the risk. Not many in his position would have done so. And that, my friends, concludes this week's 5 and 5. As always, if you have a thought on any of those stories, you can share them with me by email, jbarrett@sportsradiopd.com or on Twitter @sportsradiopd. It's now time for this week's conversation, and I'm excited to bring it your way. It takes place with Chicago sports radio executive Mitch Rosen, who presently oversees the programming for the market's leading station, 670 The Score. I had the pleasure last week to travel to the Windy City and spend a little time at Mitch's radio station, and I got to tell you, he runs a great operation. I was in town because I needed to do a site check for a radio conference I'm going to be running in Chicago this March for a number of the industry's leading sports radio programming executives. This is not something open to the public. I'm not even charging for it, which some in the business have told me I'm crazy for. However, it's invitation only, and the goal behind it is to bring together a number of the format's best and brightest programming leaders to learn, share ideas, and develop relationships which will hopefully help our industry prosper. There will be more on that on the website in the months ahead, but for now, that's enough to chew on. My conversation with Mitch doesn't really get into that topic because I wanted to keep the focus on his career and his thoughts on a variety of industry-related subjects. So I'm going to shut up now and let you enjoy what we were able to create during the span of 25 minutes together.
3, 2, 1.
All right, before we get into talking about the station and some of the stuff about your market, let's go back to the beginning when Mitch Rosen was thinking about getting into radio. So
yeah.
Take me through who you listened to that inspired you to want to even look at this crazy business.
Yeah, it's funny. So I remember I always loved radio. I was one of those radio geeks that had a transistor radio underneath my pillow, and I liked late night talk radio. It was a good excuse to stay up late and, you know, hide from my parents, you know, not to, to be sleeping, but to listening. And I always listened to WGN radio again when I was, freshman or sophomore in high school. And they had a late night host. His name was Eddie Schwartz. And he was an icon in Chicago for overnight radio. He'd have celebrities on. He'd have politicians on. If a fire broke out in the middle of the night, he'd be all over it. So I wrote him a letter, dating myself, no email, no cell phones. Dear Mr. Schwartz, I listen to your show every night. I'd love to come see the radio station. So probably 2-3 weeks later, I remember it was a weekday afternoon. I was home from school about 4 o'clock. The phone rings and I answered, hello. And it was Eddie Schwartz on the other line saying, I got your note. Would love to have you come down. How's the Friday night? Ask your mom and dad. And they brought me down to the station, and it was the first night I spent, you know, eyes wide open, walking into a radio station. And ever since then, I was hooked. And the ironic part with that is my first full-time job in radio, I ended up working for Eddie Schwartz as his producer overnight at WGN.
Wow.
So it came full circle, and my salary was $12,500.
Big bucks.
Big bucks, and many stories about that. But so, you know, to make a long story boring, got the bug early and never lost it.
And I thought it was interesting. You mentioned you wrote a letter.
Correct.
Back then, we didn't have the internet. You think about the advantages that people today complain about, the things they deal with. I'm like, do you have any idea, man, about cutting reel-to-reel tape and dealing with sending letters and demo tapes on cassette?
No doubt. But, Jason, don't you miss some of that? I think sometimes even in our business and in everyday life, you know, I have one child. He's a 17-year-old senior in high school. And social media gets in the way of life sometimes. So not to sound corny or like an old fart, but sometimes, you know, social media overload is too much.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I do miss some of that stuff. I do like that I can email someone now rather than sending, you know, a letter and hope that it made it there and all that. But wiping carts, that doesn't excite me.
On the magnetic thing?
Yes. Right. Terrible.
Yes.
Terrible. I was not good at that. But no. There are a lot of things about that old school radio that when you learn it, it's just, it carries over.
I agree. I agree.
You appreciate things. So let's talk about how you wind up at this place, Score.
So it's ironic. So I was at our direct competitor, WMVP, for 9+ years and had a great time. And it worked for, you know, Evergreen Media, AM/FM, and Disney took over. And it was a good experience, good people. But, you know, it became more of an accounting job. What's your 5-year plan? What's your 3? And I kind of woke up one day and took a chance and said, you know, I'm kind of burnt out. Let me try to do something else. And my wife was, what? You work for Disney, successful station. And I just felt, you know, it was time to do something else. So I left that and connected with a company who was a sports agent for about a year, represented some broadcasters. I felt I was always on the other side of the desk. I don't have a law degree, but I felt I was a good negotiator and knew a lot of people in the business. So I did that for a year. And it was fun, but I missed the action. I missed the breaking news. I missed working, you know, with our production people on a promo or, you know, booking a great guest. And the Score had an opening. The general manager at the time, Paul Agassi, called me, and I didn't know him. And we sat and talked for 4 hours, and I had a lot of ideas how to improve the Score, this legendary brand. And I've been here since February of 2005. So my math isn't good. What's that, 13 or 14 years?
Yeah, you're going on 13
years.
Yeah,
so it's an eternity in this business. But I love it. I still wake up every day eager to go. And I still love the action and you know, love being part of this medium.
So let's talk about being part of a legacy brand. What's the best part of it?
The best part of it is are the people, are the personalities, the producers, the listeners. You know, as we tape this today, we have an event in our Blue Cross Blue Shield performance stage. You know, probably 50 or 70 listeners will be here. I love feedback. I go to as many remotes as I can. To me, that's you know, my grassroots marketing and to get a vibe what people like, what they don't like about our brand. But being associated with an iconic brand in Chicago, it's exciting. It's challenging. It's, you know, sometimes there's pressure on this brand, but it survived 25 plus years. Can't get complacent. We look to improve it every day. You know, this was a challenging year for us, and I know we'll probably get into this later. Terry Boers, who has been here 25 years, retired. So, you know, changed a couple day parts in, brought somebody in from the outside, and, you know, those are challenging yet exciting times in this business.
No doubt. Let's talk about,
as those were the pros, what are the biggest challenges of running a station that's been successful for more than two decades?
Well, staying relevant. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't rely on, oh, we've been a brand for 25 years. Ever-changing media landscape, the digital and social world, changing with that on a daily basis. I like to say playing the hits. How does every show, every day play the hits? And what I mean by that, if I ran a classic rock station, you know, the Who, Zeppelin, Stones, what are the hits today? What are the Chicago sports fans talking about? And that's what I think most of our shows do on a daily basis. So the challenging part is non-complacency. And listen, this is a town, I think a rare town, where you have two very good sports radio stations. It's competition is great. So when you look at this format in Chicago, and you have a combined cum sometimes of over 2.5, sometimes almost 3 million people, you're doing something right. But the competitive action of having a direct competitor, you know, gets me going every day.
Yeah, I think that's exciting. It makes, first of all, if you're wired to be competitive and to do this job well, you like going and knowing that you've got to be on today, because if you're not, your competitor's going to steal a listener for a quarter hour. But if you're just a guy who doesn't like pressure, then it's probably the worst thing for
you. Yeah. No, you got to fight for every quarter. You're right. You break it down to every quarter hour. You're fighting for everything. You know, we share, the research shows, you share audience with your direct competitor. If they're not listening to us, they're probably listening to them. You know, it's a sample. If I'm a P1 of you, it might be a P1, P2 of them, and vice versa. And you're fighting for every quarter hour. You're fighting for the best content, the best guests, the best topics. And that's the ballgame we're in.
So let's talk about on the PD side. You know, one of the aspects of the job that's important is managing up. It's not just managing down. You're going through that right now. Perfect example. Now you have a relationship with your new market manager that's coming in, which is helpful. But like anybody, like the new boss is coming in, everybody's got... Give me some advice that if another PD's out there, you know, they don't have the equity that you have for two decades of running the top three market, but they're out there, new market managers walking in the door. What would you tell them they should be doing?
Well, I think you just have to look in the mirror. If you're doing your job, if you're playing the hits, if you manage your talent well, today, if you work closely with sales and promotions, the business has changed over the years. You know, there used to be a division of sales and programming. Now it's one. I mean, I'm proud to say that, you know, half of my job is kind of a pseudo sales manager, but I love it because I can intertwine that with our product. But in terms of advice, I mean, individuals know, I think, how to manage. I don't like the word manage up. I mean, you work closely, especially with your market manager. You become a partner. You respect what they say, and you work closely. You can't be intimidated. Ooh, a new boss is coming in. I think when you work in a market like Chicago, if you're a program director in Chicago, you would hope the market manager goes, listen, I respect that person, you know, with his or her brand. And if the numbers are there and you have a good oversight of the brand, trust is a big thing, but it takes time to earn trust.
All right, so let's talk about, you mentioned numbers. All right, are you that guy at 12 o'clock on Monday that's running to his computer when the new weekly comes out?
Can you swear on this podcast?
Yeah.
Fuck yeah. I'm also the guy on Sunday mornings at 8 o'clock Chicago time that pulls media monitors and sees what our average meter count is, even though, you know, it's non-down, you know, it could be a 6-year-old or an 85-year-old. Yeah, I'm at 12:01 or 12 waiting on the countdown. That's how we're judged. That's how you see results.
Right.
Unfortunately, I'd say fortunately, I do think the PPM system works. I'm a big believer in it. I think it's true measurement compared to the diary, where I think I listened to that, you know, 2 weeks ago or 5 days ago. So yeah, I'm every week I print the weeklies out. I talk to our hosts and producers. I'll email them, you know, screenshots of the weekly. Usually in the monthly, we'll sit down and look at hour by hours and, you know, continue to have to get better.
So are there anything specifically, like, are you more of a quarter hour by quarter hour guy? Are you a full show guy? How do you essentially
both.
Look at things?
I mean, I'm a full show guy. I'm an hour by hour. You know, we have a lot of dedicated segments here. So a lot of times we'll pull segments, you know, everything from Joe Madden is on this station once a week. Let's see how that's doing.
Right.
There's signature staple segments in our midday show. They do a segment, Can't Do It. It's an interactive listener TSL driven. I want to see how that does a lot. You know, in our afternoon show, we have regular guests. So yeah, I look at everything.
Well, and one thing that's important, and I've told this to a number of PDs, especially think about it from a business standpoint. Mm-hmm. If you're paying, let's just say you're paying Joe Madden a ton of money, right? Well, you want to make sure you're getting your return on investment, right? So you got to look at the quarter hours. If it wasn't popping, you'd be sitting in a conference room next year going, should we be spending this money? It's a business tool.
Right. You always have to reevaluate what you do. We have a lot of built-in experts, which is a great thing. I think appointment listening is key. But sometimes you're looking and go, you know what? It's not moving the needle. We've had this person for a while. Let's try something better.
Right. You mentioned how the you're a bigger believer in PPM than you were a diary. I think a lot of people are. Talk to me about the growth of this market, because it's always been tight between the Score and ESPN 1000. You know,
I refer to them as WMVP, their official call letters, which they hate.
It's like when I was in St. Louis, I'd read the newspaper columnists call us WXOS. I'm like, listen, dude, it's 101 ESPN. Mm-hmm. That being said, it's always been a tight race. But the market share has come up pretty significantly in the last 5 years. Mm-hmm. Is that about meters, or is that just there's a bigger appetite because sports has been better?
I think sports has been better. Look what, I mean, the Cubs had not won in 108 years. Prior to the World Series last year, they were in two National League Championship Series or one. It's always a Bears town. There's always something to talk about. Going into the season, oh, nobody cares about the Bulls. Then all of a sudden, you know, some guy literally breaks somebody's face. Now you have a story. Now you have a sports radio story, literally.
Right.
I don't know if I've ever heard the official medical report, he broke his face, but
yes,
that's how they reported it. So there's always something. You know, we're in the opinion business. Sports radio, I look at, are the modern day columnists on the radio. I love newspapers. I think it's common knowledge that circulation is fading. So I tend to think, you know, like for our morning show with Mully and Hanley, an extremely strong brand, you know, people don't open up the papers much anymore, you know, read it with your cup of coffee. I think we've become the sports section of what people turn to in the morning and throughout the day. I truly believe that.
So one thing I want to ask you about, WMVP, as you refer to them.
My former employer.
They're obviously owned by Disney, ESPN, which on a national scale has taken a lot of hits over the last 2 years. You know, layoffs and all the Jemele Hill stuff. Do you think that impacts people locally?
I don't think about it. It's not my issue to think about. I just think in Chicago, people, you know, they want to hear the hits. And, you know, sometimes politics and sports is, you know, these are uncharted waters.
Yep.
What we've seen with Kaepernick and you know, presidential, you know, comments about the NFL. So I think people just want to hear the hits no matter what they are. But, whatever ESPN, listen, it's still a $1 billion brand. It's the most visible brand in sports. And they, you know, I think they do a great job nationwide.
You mentioned earlier how going through a challenge of having to replace Terry Bors, you know, Mark Chernoff, well, you know what he's dealing with going through that in New York right now with Mike Francesa leaving. But having gone through that, where you lose a legendary talent, Terry Bors was a mainstay here for a long time.
25 years, day one.
Right. I mean, Frances is 28. Mm-hmm. You're, you know, 30, but 28 in afternoons. Those guys are hard to replace.
Right.
When you're going through that process, because you know no matter who goes in, you're going to get killed no matter what immediately.
Right.
But you have to have a long-term view of this stuff. Take me through your process of what that year was like leading up to Terry leaving and what you're essentially trying to do as you enter some uncharted waters, as you mentioned.
Yeah, you know, people think, oh, you're like, Terry, I knew for a year. When we did his last contract, myself, Terry, and the market manager at the time, Rod Zimmerman, we knew that was it. And people said, oh, you had a year to plan, you know, why was it a hard decision? Well, things change and day parts change. And, you know, at the end of the day, you just do what you feel is right for the audience. And, you know, Terry's replacement, we had Dan Bernstein here, who's been here, I think, 20 plus years. And then, you know, then I thought, who is the best person to work with Dan? And Jason Goff grew up he started as a listener, would call in as a kid. Jason from Evanston was an intern, was a producer, went to Atlanta, came back. And, you know, at the end of the day, I really thought that he was the best fit. And I believe he's the best fit for afternoons. It's not about replacing Terry, in my opinion. It's giving the audience what I think they want.
Mm-hmm.
It's a familiar voice. It's somebody who was branded with that show as their longtime producer. Bernstein is there. So it all makes sense to me, and I believe in that show. And, you know, they have a good relationship. I have one of the best sound producers in the country in Chris Tannehill on that show. We promoted a producer from within, Nick Shepkowski, an executive producer. So it just felt right to me. But it takes time to think. You know, it wasn't like, this is it, when Terry told me. a lot of things went through my head. It's like working in a war room, in a draft room with the NFL. How about this? How would this person work? But at the end of the day, I went with the best fit that I thought.
How important do you think it is? Because you mentioned how Goff had paid his dues here, went out, got some experience, and then came back, right? And even then, he was with Spiegel and midday moved up.
Right.
And for the fan, what they're going through in New York, Giannotti was a guy who did the same thing. Mm-hmm. Chris Carlin has done the same things. Mm-hmm. How important is that to you when you're going through a talent search?
Well, I think it's important. But on the other side of the coin, you know, we brought in Danny Parkins, who grew up in Chicago, very successful in Kansas City. And listen, there was a lot of risk and second people questioning, well, why are you bringing an outsider? You have great have tremendous talent here. But again, sometimes you have to dig deep and take a chance. Mm-hmm. And I've been very, very pleased with how Danny's performing. There's no right or wrong answer. What it really shows you, I mean, you look at FAN and Chernoff, it's not an easy decision.
No.
And it's not an easy job to go find who's next. And, you know, immediately you think, all right, who's a former Jock? Who's a former Bear? Well, it's great, but in the middle of baseball season when, you know, the Cubs are battling the Cardinals, I need someone that can talk intelligently about baseball.
Right.
So that's the challenge in finding that person. It's a dream job. It's a tremendous job, sports radio, but it's challenging, you know.
It is.
To find who's next.
Well, and also, as the PD, you know, you're the guy making the call. Everyone likes to throw darts at you no matter what call you make.
Second guessing, sure.
Yeah, I mean, we all second guess the head coach in the NFL on Sunday, but that doesn't mean we could do the head coach's job.
No doubt. And hey, listen, I accepted this job. I still love doing it, and I love feedback. You know, someone said feedback is a gift, and it truly is, whether from sales or the audience. I try to answer every email from the audience, every call. Like I said, I'll work the room in here because I want feedback. Those are our customers. And, you know, if one of those persons has a meter and I piss that person off or somebody does, it's not good. So I look at those as our customers.
One thing I want to give you some credit for that I want to pick your brain on is part of those changes, you elevated Goff into afternoons. You have Lawrence Holmes at night. We see, you know, for a long time, sports radio was very white, and that's just being candid and putting it bluntly. Now you see it around the country, like right now, look, Maggie Gray and Bart Scott are part of that mix. How important do you think it is for stations to be looking beyond just the way they used to do it and trying to look in different spaces?
Yeah. I think diversity is extremely important, but that being said, I put Jason Goff in there because he's the best person to be Dan Bernstein's partner. Lawrence Holmes is, and I don't say, oh, he's one of the smartest African-American. No, he's one of the smartest people I know. I don't look at it that way. I, you know, on a personal note, my son goes to a school where he's a minority. He doesn't know any different. That's great. That's what the real world is. So I don't look at that.
I hear at the same time, like when we, a black quarterback, no, if he's a quarterback and he's good, who gives a damn what he looks like? Is he talented?
Right. So I, listen, you know, again, diversity is extremely important, but at the end of the day, Jason and Lawrence and Herb Lawrence, one of our executives, they're here because they're great at what they do. They're not here because of their race. I don't look at it at all that way.
Let's talk about talent. So when you were going through that process, right, and you ultimately land on a Danny Parkins, and you're going to have a ton of options in a market like this, what are you looking for when it comes to an on-air talent? Some guy is reaching out, goes, Chicago's my dream job. I want to be there in 10 years. How do I get on Mitch Rosen's radar?
Opinions. In Danny's case, he could drive a show. I knew I needed a driver there. I listened to him a lot in Kansas City. I snuck him in for a week overnights in the middle of summer and heard him live. I get up crazy early, so I heard him live. Met with him a couple times, talked to him, just felt his passion, hungry. You know, besides it being somebody's dream job, that's fine. Did he have the chops to do it? Smart. You know, a lot of people make fun of Syracuse people, QZs, or they all sound alike. He, to me, is cutting through, and that makes a difference.
So what about if a guy reaches out and says, hey, I want to send you a demo. What do you look for on that demo? Because I ask PDs, some guys want an hour of unedited stuff. Some want 5 minutes. What do you look for?
I'll take 10 or 15 minutes unedited, and I'll tell them what I want it.
If it's good, I want more, right?
Right. I need, you know, the basics. Teasing, energy, working the clock, give me an opinion, and, you know, working a topic.
I'm going to hit you with a couple quick hits in a minute, but I got two others I want to hit you with. So phone calls have been a huge part of sports radio for the last two decades. Yet you look at the data where young people are. We were talking about this earlier. They don't use the phone.
Mm-hmm.
Where is this business in 5 to 10 years with getting people to call?
It's interesting. I think when the score first started out, it was faxing and calls. Then, you know, it just went to fax us your question. You know, then email. Our text line, we rely on the text line a lot. You know, the 847, you know, hates Trubisky or hates John Fox. So it's texting. Now it's social media through Twitter and Facebook. You have to interact with your audience. Doesn't matter how. Callers are great, but sometimes you can go a whole show without calling. That's okay. You know, a lot of, you know, producers will say, God, nobody called today. Nobody's listening. Listen, less than 1% of the entire audience will ever call a radio station. Mm-hmm. So you can't be judged on the amount of callers you're getting. If you're doing good radio, you're doing good radio. So callers are great, but there's so many other ways to interact with the content that it doesn't have to be, you know, Mitch from Skokie.
Mm-hmm. You've got a lot of high-profile guys here who've had a lot of success. You've been around them for a long time. How do you continue to reach guys who, like look at Amalie and Hanley. They're tops in the morning. They kick ass in the market. How do you continue to reach those guys? And what's your process of being able to continue to evolve the show and move it forward?
Well, listen, my goal, and I think most of the talent, I want our on-air hosts to be happy. So a lot of times I say, I'm just here to make you happy. Now, being happy usually makes you're going to work harder. You're going to be more productive. Once in a while, instead of patting somebody in the back, you're going to have to kick them in the ass.
Right.
But if you earn the respect, if you're upfront and honest with people, and you're here to help them, I try to be a resource. Now, there'll be times we'll sit down and say, hey, what you did on that segment, I wouldn't have done, or I would have done it this way. But how I've managed throughout the years with talent is you got to treat them great. I mean, they're in Chicago. I'm not, you know, smaller market, you might have to play a harder hand or, you know, beat them up a little bit, you know, verbally. Here, you're in the third market. There's a reason you're here. Most likely, I've been here long enough where I hired you. I want everyone to succeed. And I want people to be happy. Now, it doesn't mean running down the hallways whistling Dixie, but what it means is I want you to come in and enjoy what you do. This is sports radio, right? We're not lugging garbage cans. We're not, you know, risking our lives like, you know, what police and firemen do that is unbelievable. But I want you to enjoy what you do. And if I can help you with that and keep you happy, That's how I manage.
Wouldn't you say it's also important for a PD to let his talent know when he's doing great stuff, not just bad? I mean, I hear so many people, you know, this is wrong. We got to fix this. We got to fix that. Hey, by the way, your guys are winning.
Yeah. I mean, a text here and there. Hey, that was a great segment. I loved that. I went back and listened to the podcast. I listen. I mean, I listen here. I listen in the car. I don't take the train. There's an old clock radio in our kitchen. I get up crazy early. My wife in bed will turn that thing off, the radio, that is. That is, you know, you kill them with kindness in a good way, in a sincere way. You know, all our on-air personalities, our producers, they work so hard. We want them to succeed.
So let's wrap up on a couple of quick hits. I'm going to hit you with four questions, first thought that pops to mind.
Okay.
Best advice for a young program director would be?
Treat the talent with respect.
One move you wish you had back?
You know, I'm very close with a guy named Dan McNeil, and him and I went through a lot of things together as he had personal issues he's very public about. I wish more as a friend than a boss that I could have helped him more with his addictions.
One area of the business to keep an eye on over the next 5 years would be what?
The ever-changing digital landscape, all different ways to push your content out there. We're in the content business. I don't even say we're in the pure radio business anymore. It's content. In what ways, what platforms do we push it out?
And then finally, the greatest Chicago sports moment for Mitch Rosen.
It wasn't even working here. I'm a huge White Sox fan. 1983, I was in high school. My grandparents had White Sox season tickets. The White Sox clinched the division against the Mariners in 83. I ran out on the field like every other Jamoke and brought home a patch of grass from the field, put it in like a drinking glass jar, and it probably lived for about 2 weeks. As a fan, that was my most memorable. But as a father, being able to enjoy a World Series game with the White Sox with my son, a Stanley Cup, going to a Super Bowl, that will override my personal because I love, you know, hanging with my kid as I know you do.
So as a White Sox fan, were you like thrilled when the Cubs won the World Series on your air?
I was thrilled for all my friends, for all the fans. I'm a firm believer you can be one or the other. You can't be both.
Right.
I'm a White Sox fan, But for business and for all my friends and the great people at the Cubs, go Cubs, go.
He is Mitch Rosen. He's the program director for 670 The Score in Chicago. We'll be working together on a programming conference coming up in March. I'm looking forward to it, and I appreciate you having me out here.
Thanks for talking to me, Jason. It's always great to see you, and March will be a lot of fun, and thanks for coming in our house today.
This is the Barrett Sports Media Podcast.
That was Mitch Rosen, program director of 670 The Score in Chicago. For those of you out there who have reached out to me before and asked me about what PDs look for in a demo, I hope Mitch's advice was helpful to you. I operate in similar fashion. Give me 10 good unedited minutes, and if I like what I hear, I'll request more. Not every programmer, though, operates that way, so keep that in mind when you're reaching out to build relationships or pursuing jobs. A few other areas of the discussion that I enjoyed were Mitch's candor on how he went about replacing Terry Bores, diversity in sports radio, the way he gathers feedback from the audience, as well as his perception of the Chicago sports radio scene. You know, one very cool thing about the Chicago market's competitive landscape is that Mitch and ESPN 1000 program director Adam Delavitt have a very good relationship. They're driven to beat each other, and I'm sure some of those phone calls after a ratings win are probably very entertaining to listen to. But they both have great brands with a number of high-profile talent, they have a lot of respect for one another, and they're usually within striking distance of each other in the ratings. Tip of the cap to both of those guys on doing a great job. And on that note, we're going to bring this episode of the Barrett Sports Media Podcast to a close. My thanks again to Mitch Rosen and to each of you for taking the time to listen. A reminder, I spent time with Mike Francesa at his office at WFAN in New York. I have a piece I'm working on about it. It should be on the website, sportsradiopd.com, the week after Thanksgiving. So keep your eye out for that. Also, for my friends on the executive levels, we talk about the importance of growing our brands, receiving feedback, and welcoming new ideas, and there's no better way to prove you're serious about that than by reaching out to yours truly. I work with stations as a consultant and strategist and take pride in helping programmers get the maximum out of their stations. To find out how I can help you and your company, visit sportsradiopd.com. My services and contact information are listed there. In the words of Kid Rock, if it looks good, you'll see it. If it sounds good, you'll hear it. If it's marketed right, you'll buy it. But if it's real, you'll feel it. So be authentic in everything you do. Until next time, I'm Jason Barrett. Thanks for stopping by.
You don't want to believe it, but maybe the show is over.
Thank you for listening to the Barrett Sports Media Podcast. To stay updated on the latest sports media news, follow Jason on Twitter at SportsRadioPD and visit our website, sportsradiopd.com.